They kept lumbering toward me. I flew up and behind them, and they followed, twisting their heads and arms so far they almost fell over. I'd seen this behavior before. Creature double feature out of Boston. Late night movies on the Sci-Fi Channel.
"Okay, enough's enough,"
I shouted.
"I want you both down on the ground now."
I raised my hand and let the energy build. Sparks shot off my fingertips, and I knew looking at my palm was like looking at the sun. The shadows in the alley vanished. They didn't blink. I don't think I'd seen them blink yet.
"Get down, this is your last warning."
The man banged his ruined teeth together with a noise like crunching glass. In front of my hand, the air superheated and did a trick everyone else on Earth needs a super collider and a magnetic bottle to pull off. An arc of raw plasma scorched its way through the alley, a millimeter wide but igniting everything within 4 or 5 times that range. It could burn through concrete like the proverbial hot knife through butter. So searing the old man's thigh to the bone was no challenge at all. I lost it, and if this had been a normal man, I would have killed him, or crippled him for life at best. As it was, he didn't notice. His stagger swung a little to the left, but he kept moving toward me. I don't know why I thought a leg burn would slow him down, when having his teeth and tongue burn out of his mouth hadn't. They still hadn't blinked. Their eyes were dull and gray. I think they might have been blind. I still don't know to this day. But right then, I knew what they were. I'd said it to Stealth as a joke, but here they were right in front of me. No joke, no gag, no doubt what these people had turned into. I didn't know how, but it was useless to deny it. My fingers flexed again. The air boiled. Night turned to day. And the man's head vanished in a cloud of fine ash. It was so fast, his body stood there for a moment with nothing above his shoulders but a cauterized stump. And then it collapsed, with steam drifting from the neck and leg. The woman opened her jaws wide and brought her teeth together with a solid clack. I heard the repeating bang, saw the heat spike, traced both bullets as they streaked down the alley and smashed their way into the old woman's head. Her face collapsed in on itself like a balloon. She dropped like a sack. That's just a little taste of X-Heroes by Peter Kleins. This is Elliot Miller with another Gaming Gang Extra. This time I'm talking with Peter Kleins, author of the superhero meet zombie apocalypse novel X-Heroes, and the soon-to-be-released sequel X-Patriots from Permuted Press. Hi, Pete. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Elliot. Thanks very much for having me.
So perhaps you could tell me a little bit about yourself. Yeah, how was life growing up in Maine? You know, I always thought that Maine was a fictional place, kind of like Arkham, Massachusetts.
It is at points. It was really neat. I grew up in an extremely small town, which actually is almost entirely tourist-based. Someone told me once that the population increases by like 90%, that there's usually like 2,000 people during the winter and school years and almost 20,000 during the summer. Yeah, but I mean, it was an incredibly small town. If my parents hadn't moved to Plymouth, Massachusetts for high school, I would have graduated in a class of, I think, 98 kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Amity from Jaws.
Yeah, most exactly. Including, I lived right on the coast. There were 3 beaches that could ride a bike to.
Nice.
And the big thing, of course, for me was there was a little tiny newsstand down in the center of York Beach, Garfield's News, which was open year-round. And that was where, early on, again, you know, small kid growing up in the 70s, I would just bike down there all on my own, go through the comic racks. And as I got a little older, there was like a little tiny paperback section of, you know, like 4 shelves. There were some sci-fi books, and I would start going through those. And I realized later in life, actually, that the owner, Mr. Garfield, would actually, if I bought, like, the first book in a series, he would order the next book.
Really?
I realized, that's how I ended up reading, like, all the John Carter books for Edgar Burroughs.
Uh-huh.
If you remember way back then, they had, like, the Han Solo books.
Yes.
If you remember this, and the Lando Calrissian books.
Uh-huh. Remember Han Solo at Star's End?
Yep, Han Solo and the Lost Legacy, all those great books.
Uh-huh.
All
the original Star Wars books that came out.
Yeah, all of which are like gone now. I guess you can't find them anywhere.
Yeah, they're really hard to find now. Now, eventually you moved on to California and worked in the film industry for years in prop design and as a prop master. Now, what is something like that like?
That I actually just completely stumbled into. But essentially, it's the easiest way to describe it is the prop master is, well, the prop department. These are the people who are responsible for that actors are holding and in some cases wearing. Wearing things becomes like an odd overlap with the wardrobe department. Most weapons tend to fall to the prop department. You know, if you see something like right now, you know, we're both talking on phones. So my phone is a prop. Jewelry can be a prop. You know, if you see the guy carrying his briefcase or a cup of coffee or whatever, all that's props. So it's a very continuity intensive job because you have to know if we're filming scene, you know, 30 today and a guy is walking into the scene with a briefcase, then 2 weeks from now when we film scene 29, you have to make sure he walks out of scene 29 carrying that briefcase in the right hand, facing the right way, all that sort of stuff.
Very, very detailed.
Yeah. It is. It's a great job for crazy detail-oriented people. And it can make you very obsessive-compulsive at points because you, well, you've got to be organized. You have to know where stuff is. Oh, and yeah. I got to do a lot of movies. I got to meet a lot of people. I just lucked out that essentially a lot of things that sort of helped me as a writer, being very conscious of continuity, of motivation, stories, story logic, that sort of thing, helps make me a really good prop guy. So I did that for, like you said, I think about 15 years altogether. I started way, way, way back on a little USA original movie and then did an old martial arts TV show called Vanishing Sun. Tons of stuff as the years went on. You know, I did a Beastmaster movie. I did a late night cable movie called Psycho Beach Party, if anyone's heard. A couple years back, I think it was in 2006, nice. There were like some issues with the job I'd been on for about a year. I'd been working for this one company. Production designer, who's like my immediate boss, he and I sat down. It essentially comes down to like option A, option B, or option C, you need to find another prop master. And he was like, well, let me talk to my bosses and think about it. And then he basically came back together with me and said, yeah, we're going to go with option C. And and I was really okay with it because I told him right up front, I can't really complain if I give you three choices and you pick one of them. But what happened was at the time, I actually sold a couple short stories already, and I was writing articles for a magazine called Creative Screenwriting, which had a magazine but also had a very big online newsletter that, you know, always wanted to be a writer and have like a month off between movies or something from the magazine, stuff like that. And so she said, well, rather than go and try to find another job, because, you know, you're on set and you see like, but, you know, if we just did this, the story would make a lot more sense and this character. No, we're just going to go. So she was just like, why don't you just try and write? And so right there, I pretty much dropped everything. I told the magazine I'd be available full time trying to write books on the side. Pretty much, yeah, and that pretty much fills everything to today.
Well, it seems like it was a pretty good choice. How did you become involved with Permuted Press?
They were actually places I sold short stories to. They had Kim Paffenroth, who wrote a phenomenal book called Dying to Live, was editing a zombie anthology called History is Dead. I can't even remember. I think I heard it online somewhere, but I stumbled across it, found the Permuted website. This sounds like something I could do. I could write this. I ended up writing a story for it, made like his first round, but then I actually didn't get into the anthology. but I sold that story somewhere else, and by that time, Permuted had already announced another anthology, and I did get into that one. And that was Cthulhu Unbound, which was originally going to be one anthology, but they got so many good stories, they actually expanded it into two volumes. And I got into that, and that was my first Permuted sale. A little while after that, I actually then got into Kim Paffenroth's next anthology, which was The World is Dead, which was another just straight zombie anthology. And so when I came up with the idea for X-Heroes, I was already kind of known there. And, you know, it's a small enough press that I could actually go to Jacob Keir, the publisher, and say, hey, we've actually been talking. Now I've got to like pull dates out of my head. Back in like March of 2008, which was right out when I'd sold these two stories. Actually, no, I'd only sold the Cthulhu story at that point, The Long Deep Dream. He and I were actually talking about let's be polite and say, a major comic company had promised a superhero zombie crossover, and it had come out, and it was very popular, but it was just not remotely what I had expected to see, and I was very disappointed in it. And he and I talked about it, and, you know, I was like, I expected to see, you know, like the great superhero Last Stand, seeing the guy's awful choices, the different types of heroes, and the people. How would the other survivors deal with this? I mean, how frustrating is it when, Superman's here trying to deal with your zombies for you, But the zombies aren't really a threat to him. I mean, their teeth are going to break on his skin. Same thing with Iron Man. And I thought all that is like such interesting material, and none of it got touched on in Superhero Zombie.
Yes, and you're right, it didn't.
And also, just on top of that, I thought it was... The writer, who remained anonymous, even though he really isn't, does such phenomenal work. Other zombie stories. He's like mind-blowingly good stuff that I'm envious of. And this thing was just so bad. I started playing around with the ideas myself, and so I was able to go to Jacob Keir as X-Hero started to take shape and say, hey, do you remember we had that conversation like 3 or 4 months ago about superhero zombies? What would you think if you saw a book like that? And he was like, well, I'd be interested in seeing it, I guess, yeah. And that was that. I finished the book in like September, October, and submitted it to him. He bought it 3 days before Christmas, 2008.
Oh, nice Christmas present.
Yeah, exactly. That was
You know, and I'll admit, when I was going through and I was looking for something to read, the premise just it sounded a bit too much like a comic book to me when I first looked at it. Soon after I started to read it, I realized that it had a lot more in common with, say, The Walking Dead than it did with The Super Friends. And it's definitely a novel written for adults, although I'm not really sure how you would write a zombie novel for kids.
There's actually there's one coming out, actually.
Really?
Yeah, James Meltzer is another permitted author, actually. He also does a lot of stuff on his own, but he's actually working on a zombie young adult novel for permitted called Teenage Wasteland.
See, there's zombies for everybody.
Yeah, for all age groups.
That's great. You know, I found it gritty, I found it tense. There were some really surprising twists and turns in X-Heroes, and it kept me on the edge of my seat all the way to the end. Now, there was a lot of action. The characters, they acted like real people. What kind of reactions have you gotten to X-Heroes from your readers?
Really good. I'm glad people overall got what I was trying to do with it. I mean, I wanted it to be a realistic story, like you said. I wanted it to be for adults, but I didn't want it to be like a lot of comic books from any company seem to be, that the only way you can make something adult is to make it incredibly gritty and make it incredibly dark and make it every character so flawed and so messed up. I mean, again, I grew up on comic books in the 70s and 80s. I remember buying The Dark Knight Returns as a comic book when it was like there on the rack. I remember Watchmen on the rack as a comic book, you know, as a 12-issue comic series. So I remember that going to that, and I never have had a problem with comics that go very dark and gritty. It's just that I wanted to see something where the heroes actually were heroic and were someone you could look up to without having to have feet and calves, thighs, and hips of clay. So that's been really nice. It's also at the same time been kind of enlightening in that I've read many things where people, like reviews on Amazon, that read a ton of stuff into it, just wasn't there, or at least wasn't there when I was writing it. You know, and I mean, obviously, every book is going to have a degree of interpretation from the readers. There are a couple of things every now and then from some people. I'm like, where the heck did you come up with that? You know, I don't know what book were you reading? So I think at some point I've really come to realize that a lot of I try not to read reviews as much. I mean, so many people always say that I try not to read reviews, and I've come to realize it's true. Because I obsess over them, and I know I will, anytime I get any sort of negative review or any positive review, I'll go crazy. So I try not to, but I did come to realize while I was like more actively following them and reading every single one, I think when you read a review, it tells you a lot more about the person writing it than about what they were reading.
Yeah, you know, that's probably true.
You know, when just seeing how some people interpret some things and how they react to it. Overall, very positive.
Well, you know, from what I've seen, I checked out a few. And the ones right up top are really positive, especially on Audible. It really helped me make the decision. So kudos to them over there. How about telling me about some of your favorite characters?
I mean, that's tough to say. It's really, I like all of them. There's like all these random characters, like a lot of people, I have like odd sketches of different things, a little more about this person, about that person. I mean, there are some of the regular people at the Mount who I think are, there's a woman, Billy, that you get a lot more of. There's the guy Jarvis who shoots a couple things. There's, you know, and obviously there's St. George, there's Stealth. I love, one of the things I really liked about Stealth in that sort of obsessive Batman way was the thought of what kind of person do you have to be that, you know, it's been over a year since the apocalypse, the whole world's collapse, there's a good chance you've got like a sizable percentage of the world's population living here in this little wall with you, and you're still hiding your identity. What kind of person are you if you're doing something like that? I mean, I don't know. It's like saying, who's your favorite kid? You know?
Yeah.
You've got three children, but which is your favorite? Come on. I think there had to be something likable about all of them, or I wouldn't have put them in.
Now, as you said, I know that Expatriates, the sequel to X-Heroes, is coming out pretty soon. Keeping in mind that, you know, we haven't read it yet, we don't want to spoil anything, you don't want to spoil anything, can you say something about Expatriates?
Yeah, I mean, I can give you a basic idea. Really, Expatriates kind of came out of, well, okay, keep in mind that first off, right off the bat, obviously when I wrote X-Heroes, I had no concept that I was going to get another book, that I was going to get another chance. So really, I mean, X-Heroes was written to just stand alone. Mm-hmm. The book would end and that would be it, and I would probably never deal with these characters again. Right off the bat, the publisher was so in love with it, Jacob Gere. He started talking to me a sequel in the same email that he told me he wanted to buy it.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad of that.
So in this one, I got to expand a little bit and got to think more about, okay, well, where would I go now in this world? What would be like some of the next logical things that would happen? It's always gnawed at me. Whenever I see zombie movies, read a lot of zombie, books, enough that I think it's a very standard trope in zombie mythology, I guess, zombie stories. Eventually, sometime around the second, third act of our story, the military shows up. And the military is pretty much always insane, and they want your women and your ammo and your food, and they're going to just leave you here to die defenseless against the zombies if they roll on to the next little town or something like that, murderers or whatever. And I mean, I think there's a valid point to that. I mean, I think some of the things we've seen and heard about coming back from the Middle East, it's not surprising that some people would snap under pressure. But I think it's big disservice to, you know, the U.S. military, to the Army, to the Marines, to the Air Force, everybody, when you just assume everyone's going to snap. That obviously the Army is like the worst possible group you could hook up with if something bad happens. One of the things I decided right off was I wanted to bring the military in to make them good guys. I wanted to be that, you know what, these are, you know, they are trying to do the right thing. They haven't snapped. They're not insane. They're honestly here to try and help. What I figured is if I didn't want to have this sort of stock fake military conflict, because there's enough conflict really just between the military way of doing things and the civilian way of doing things. I mean, if you have friends in the military, if you have relatives in the military, you're probably aware that it's a completely different lifestyle. I mean, it's a different world living, you know, being in the military. You know, everything about it is different. And so just that difference in approach to problems, approach to issues, would give me a lot of conflict. And there would also be extra conflict in, since the civilians have the superheroes, they're in this rare position of actually the civilians are the dominant force. Normally, you know, you see these things, the military says, well, we're the ones with the guns, so you're doing it our way. And now we're in this weird position of, well, we're the ones with the bulletproof guy, who's super strong, so you're doing it our way. That was like my basic thought at first. And then different ideas sort of playing around in my head and ideas I wanted to, and I always hate it when people say that, it's not specific, but there were ideas I wanted to explore. Right. And, you know. Just different things I thought would be fun. I mean, honestly, I write stuff that I hope is fun to read, stuff that I think I would like to read. So when I come across an idea and I go, oh, that'd be cool, I generally try, it's probably a good thing to do. Yeah, and sometimes, yeah, you come up with an idea that's really cool, and after you play with it for a while, you realize, oh, yeah, Expatriates basically became, it takes place about a year after X-Heroes ends. Without trying to give away too much for the people who haven't read X-Heroes, the survivors from X-Heroes are trying to deal with this sudden influx in population that they've had. People are getting stretched thin. They're having to look further and further to find supplies. What they actually end up finding is that there's a whole military base out in Arizona that's still up and running and manned and everything that has been trying to get itself put back together, you know, so we can get out and start helping people. I don't know. It was a lot of fun. It's probably the most work I've ever had to do with it because, like I said, I am not in the military and never have been. So it was really important to me to get as much of that authentic as possible.
So you had to do a lot of research?
I did a lot of research. I lucked out that there's another really good author, Lincoln Crisler, in the Army. Lincoln, I believe, is a staff sergeant. If he isn't, I greatly apologize to Lincoln if you're listening to this. My stepsister, as it turns out, was a master sergeant. She actually just retired last year. I got a lot of help from them. My dad was in the Navy for a while. I got some help from him. One of my best friends was in the Air Force, so I got help from him. You know, and just tried to get as much as I could about the mindset, the idea, the way you do things, the way you talk, the way you act, yeah, there are going to be things where people are going to read the book and say, what? That's not how so-and-so would do that. And yeah, that's probably true.
Well, right.
But because there are points where at the end you do just have to end of the story. But it was very important to me to get as much of it authentic as possible. There are going to be some new superpowered characters in this one.
Excellent.
I don't know if you saw that a lot of these characters are inspired years ago by characters I made up when I was a little kid. Basically, I brought in another character that I made up as a little kid, you know, revamped, obviously, as all of them were. I did not admit these characters just as they are today. But one of them actually came out of this a bit early in the book where I thought, wouldn't it be kind of neat and kind of sad? I won't really give any details on it, but if you had a superpower that turned out to be completely useless after the apocalypse, like you finally come clean that, yes, I also have superpowers.
Sorry, thanks a lot.
You're kind of useless. Sorry. Yeah, but thanks for coming clean.
What is, now what's the release date for Expatriates?
I believe it's in mid-September. There's a part of a whole deal with Audible.com that they have it right now. It's available right now through them as an audiobook, but they would get it for 60 days exclusive. Since their release date wasn't pinned down until very late, I know was having trouble trying to pin down a release date for paperback or the ebook or whatever other format. So I think right now we're sort of tentatively saying mid-late September.
Okay. Now I see that you do have it planned out as a trilogy. Have you started work on Excommunication yet?
Kind of. I sort of have the advantage, I guess, of, you know, like Hollywood, like Hollywood, you can never just do one sequel. You've always got to have a trilogy.
That's right. It's true with most books as well. I mean, if there's two, there needs to be three. That's just the way it works.
There's a lot of stuff in the second, not a lot of stuff, but a fair amount of stuff in the second book, which directly or indirectly leads to the third book. There are some things people won't even realize are setups for the third book until the third book comes out. And there are other things where it's going to be plainly obvious that I have left this thread or that thread dangling.
Excellent. And so what's the release date you're looking at for that? Tentative planning stage.
Tentative planning, if we get to do everything, if everything goes right, we're actually hoping it can come out for Christmas next year.
Okay. Well, that's going to be a long wait. So now I heard a bit about the four-part promotional series of short stories that you put together. Can you tell me some about that? Yeah.
What that was Audible went to the Jacob Care community and said, we want to do some bonus material, some extra stuff to give away with all of it. Could you recommend one of your writers? Jacob recommended me, which worked out, as far as they're concerned, really well, since out of the, I think they ended up getting 11 books from Permuted for their Zombie Fest, and I wrote two of them. So they were happy with that. And the only downside was specifically talking about all this in a little over 5 weeks to come up with four short stories that somehow connected. And I am also, I can freely admit this, I am the worst person on earth for something like that. I mean, I can write short stories. I can usually write pretty quick. But I'm really bad if you come to me and say, hey, we're doing anthologies about vampire bikers. Do you have a good vampire biker story? You know, you've got 3 weeks, and I'll just sit there for 3 weeks and I have no idea. If it didn't occur to me first, or if I didn't already have something planned like that, I'm useless. They, you know, they presented this to me, and I sort of went there going, what can I do? And so what the Junkie Quatrain is it is essentially the same 2 days in a different post-apocalyptic world. It's the same 2 days being seen through the eyes of several different characters.
Okay.
And you're seeing, if you read all the stories, they all stand alone. You know, if you only buy one, if you only buy one of the audiobooks that one comes with, you'll get a little bonus short story with it, no big deal. But if you get two or three or all four, you'll start to see where threads overlap, and you'll see the same event from different viewpoints, and thus a very different sense of what this event just was, you know, of what just happened. You know, people will toss out rhetorical questions in one story that you'll actually learn real answers for in another one. It was sort of this huge challenge, like I said. So I had 5 weeks, once I came up with this idea, create the world, create the characters, create four stories that stood alone or would work no matter what order you read them in, and then write those, polish them, and get them back to Audible.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I was freaking out. And honestly, I was kind of expecting like that they'd finally get the finished product and say, could we have our advance back?
I'm getting Expatriates through Audible. Doesn't one of the stories come with Expatriates?
Yes, Expatriates comes with one of the stories called Codependent. The trick to it is all the titles of them. Here's a fun little fact, which I don't really think has been revealed anywhere else before. because the whole thing was about different views on things and the different relationships between the people in the events, all the titles to the stories are relationship titles. The one that comes with X-Heroes or X-Patriots is Codependent. The one that comes with Brian Morgan's Acheron. Eloise J. Knapp has one called The Undead Situation, and hers, the short story that with hers is called Strictly Professional.
Okay.
And the one that actually just came out today, Histories by Ryan Thomas, Histories comes with a story called Confidentiality, which was actually short, and the original title was Dr. Patient Confidentiality. Uh-huh. That was just too kind of long and clunky.
So, do you have any other projects in the works?
I'm actually, between X-Heroes and X-Patriots was The Eerie Adventures of the Lycanthrope Robinson Crusoe was one of the, like so many of the books that are out there, Pride and Prejudice and Zombie. It's a weird little book, and I realized after the fact that it's probably never going to appeal to a lot of people except right. for some odd intellectual exercise, because I decided I'm not going to do this for laughs, I'm actually going to do it straight. And so the whole premise of it is that what if Robinson Crusoe came from a family of werewolves? When he gets stranded on this desert island, from his point of view, this is a great thing, because right. now I can't hurt anyone. This is perfect. I couldn't have asked for something better to happen to me. And then later comes to realize he has actually been shipwrecked on the worst possible island in the whole world, because the book is actually a mashup between Daniel Defoe and H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh,
so
sweet. Sweet. I'm a huge Lovecraft fan myself.
Yeah, so you might enjoy it. It's actually loaded with stuff. It's the big flaw in it, as I said, there isn't any intellectual exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I was really determined that I didn't want to play it for laughs. I wanted to make it as straight as possible. Mm-hmm. The problem is in doing so, what I did was I really sat down and I got the language and the grammar and everything, and I essentially wrote like an early 18th century horror novel. The downside of this is that I wrote an early 18th century horror novel in the 21st century. So,
right.
I mean, I've got a couple of reviews, and people are like, well, it's kind of neat, but it's hard to read, and it's, you know, it's definitely fun, and it's cool, but you do have to kind of work through it, and so I think that's always going to be, that'll be my little passion project that I think the data sold maybe like 200 copies. The thing I'm working on right now is a book it's going to come out between X-Patriots and X-Communication. It's called 14. Simply put, it's sort of an urban horror, other genres you could tack onto that. It's about a bunch of people who live in a very old apartment building and come to realize there's lots of really weird stuff about their building.
Uh-huh.
Just little mysteries, things that don't add up. And when I first moved to Los Angeles, one of the things that helped spark it was I lived in this little tiny brick studio in Koreatown in this like 80-year-old building. I mean, my office that I have in my current apartment is about the size of my whole apartment when I lived there. But one of the things that was kind of freaky was that I didn't know any of my neighbors. I didn't know anyone. And what actually became sort of a unifying event for us was when there was the big fire, and we all ended up going up on the roof of the building and watching the fire and finally meeting each other. And it became a very different building at that point. It was much friendlier. You know, you'd say hi to people now and talk, and you'd say, hey, I was going to go down and watch a movie or something. You want to come along? That sort of thing. And it struck me that this was a really neat sort of thing for a mystery story. You know, imagine if you've got a building with 20 apartments, and if everybody has one clue, you don't realize you have a clue. You just realize you have something weird about your apartment. And it's not until we all get to know each other, and I realize, well, you have something weird in your apartment too, and you have something weird in your apartment too. And as we start putting all these things together, patterns start to form up. So that was the idea of what if there's this mystery that sort of only gets solved as all these people get to know each other and become a community, which is all, you know, but entirely set in this building. And it was also because, you know, I was obviously coming out of that myself, it was very important to me. I wanted to make this about very real people who are living in the real world. It's really easy to write stories where, and all our people are independently wealthy, and they don't need to worry about going to work or paying bills or anything like that. And I thought, wouldn't it be kind of neat in a way if, you know, oh my God, we've just found out the most amazing thing ever, and, oh, but we have to stop now because, you know, Posh and Tim have to be at work. So they could have, you know, and obviously I don't want to do it to the point that like the readers are getting frustrated. I thought that would be much more relatable having, you know, people who have this really fantastic mystery they want to be working on and solving, but they have to juggle this with their lives because they just can't afford not to.
Well, sure. More realistic anyway.
And so that's really going to come out next month.
Oh, Excellent. Well, that will be another good one I'll have to look for. Now, before we finish up, as you know, we are mainly a website about gaming, and of course, zombies and superheroes are right up our alley. Do you yourself play any games?
Pretty decent gamer. I'm not like a huge fanatical one. I do admit I am horribly addicted, as someone can be, to Warhammer 40,000.
Oh, yeah.
I've been playing for about 12 years now.
Really?
Yeah, I started right after they went to third edition.
Yeah.
A really good friend of mine has been playing for ages. He's been playing since he was Rogue Trader. And he had, you know, all these little models and soldiers in his house. I'd, you know, come over sometimes and be painting and we'd hang out. And I could just never figure out the point of it. And I finally got hooked when Games Workshop started throwing out a lot of their old models.
Yeah, well, that's a good time to get hooked.
Well, do you remember there was a point like back in like, I want to say 99 or so, and Games Workshop was putting out all these little packages of just like snap together models. Like you could buy this little tiny box, like their small size cardboard box, and it would have five of the old like snap together Marines in it. The ones where every one of them is in the same pose except for like the one sergeant, and all very two dimensional.
Right, right.
Yeah, and there was another pack that had like four of the old Gene Stealers and four of the old Termagants, when Termagants were like very tiny.
Uh-huh.
I just saw these and I thought, well, you know what? I kind of like the models. I'll just, you know, I'll buy like one box of those. Maybe I'll buy two just so I can have, I'll buy three or four. Oh, look, I've got enough for an army now. Oh, well, I guess I could learn how to play this. And now I've got like eight different armies. I'm just pathetic. And
hey, it grabs us all one way or another.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was, when I was in college, I was a big Supremacy player, if you remember Supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in college. Still the same group of friends. Sometimes we'll just do like simple games like Kill Dr. Lucky. the Munchkin games are good. My girlfriend and I actually play Chrononauts a lot.
Do you?
That's a fun little two-person game that we can, that won't always be the same game when only two people are playing. So
I hear the Back to the Future game, which is kind of like a Back to the Future themed version of Chrononauts. It's supposed to be very good too.
Yeah, I actually just got that for a friend for a birthday.
There you go. So, well, I'm hoping that one of the publishers who listen to our podcast will pick up X-Heroes and see the same potential for a great game that I do.
It would be cool.
I think it would be, too. You know, they have two games coming out really soon based on The Walking Dead. And that's, I mean, yeah, The Walking Dead's been out for years, but it only really hit big once it became the TV series.
Right, once it hit the mainstream.
And so then all of a sudden now there's two board games coming out, both based on The Walking Dead. So what would be the best way for our listeners to contact you if they wanted to tell you how much they liked your books, or say a publisher wanted to contact and purchase the game development rights?
The best way to get in touch with me is I keep a really crappy little Facebook fan page. I say that, it's kind of cool, but there's a fan page on Facebook. You can see a picture of me trying to look all authorly in it. and I generally check in. I'm like sitting with like my knee up, and I'm outside by like this old sort of fireplacey thing with a skull. And
there you go.
Really kind of pretentious, actually. I check in there pretty much every day. I try to be good. I mean, if these people are good enough that they're buying the book, I try and at least, you know, respond when they say hi. And there's an email address there, which I believe it's just peerclimbs101@yahoo. That's a great place. Someone doesn't want to join the Facebook fan page.
Now, what is the best way for somebody to pick up X-Heroes or X-Patriots?
Well, X-Patriots right now, your only choice is Audible. Although I think actually you can pre-order it at Barnes & Noble right now. If you go to Barnes & Noble website, you can pre-order the paperback. And X-Heroes is pretty much available everywhere. Borders was actually carrying it in the stores, but that's obviously not really a point anymore. Hopefully I wasn't responsible for that. but yeah, I mean, it's on Amazon. It's at Barnes & Noble. It's at Walden Books. You can go to, there's a bunch of great little bookstores. Mysterious Galaxy carries it on their site. And you can go straight to the publisher. You can go straight to Premier Press and get it there, too.
Excellent. So you're just about everywhere. Sweet.
As far as I know, yeah. I think I'm not in airports. If you go to the duty-free shop, it's not.
Not yet. You don't know. Well, Pete, thank you for taking the time to talk with me. It's really been a pleasure.
You too. Thanks very much for calling. It's been fun.
Once again, that was Peter Klimbs, author of X-Heroes, which you can get on audible.com or amazon.com, or you could visit Permuted Press and order it right there. It's an excellent book. I highly recommend it. Thanks again, and this has been another Gaming Gang Extra.